Hi there, everybody. This is Armand DeMille.
And this is Roberta Maria Atti.
With you at the Positive Mind, WBAI, 99.5 FM on your dial. Bringing new ideas, concepts, just to make you lead a healthier life. Healthier, happier, more positively minded life is what we're interested in. We talk about the human mind primarily and how the body relates to the mind. Roberta is my co-host with me on Wednesdays. Yesterday, we talked about dangerous men and the women who love them. Yesterday, we focused on the psychopathic male who is predatory. His very special talent is charm. We talked about the two different types. And the one type is the charming type, and the other one is the one that's out of control, you know? The aggressive guy who's going around chewing up and spitting everything out. But then there's the other one, the charming psychopath. And the essence of his charm is the apparent emotions and sensitivity that he seems to have, although he rarely expresses it, but it just seems there right in his eyes. He understands your emotions. He is so close to you. That apparent emotions and sensitivity that the psychopathic man has is used to reel in and exploit his victims. If he becomes a car salesman, he's telling you how he understands everything about your need for safety and your love of your wife, and he tells you how beautiful you are as a couple. If he's selling you a vacuum cleaner, he'll admire your house and show you with great sympathy and emotion everything that he possibly could show you so that you'll buy his product. So the question is about emotionality. And emotionality is a big question because perhaps the greatest subject in modern American culture's couples therapy is a couple where one person, usually the man, won't show his feelings. And perhaps, well, and the men are there because they say, I can't. And the women say, you have to, and the men try.
And usually what happens is that the man doesn't have the vocabulary, doesn't have the verbal capacity to attach words to feelings. But, you know, Armand, it's interesting that I grew up in Europe, as you know, in Italy, and all throughout my youth, I was taught that it's not acceptable socially, when you are in a social situation, it's not acceptable to share your feelings. And it's actually not even acceptable to share them with a relative or with a friend. In other words, sharing your feelings is like sharing your intestines, you know? It's like sharing something about you that should be totally and completely a private experience, an individual experience. So it's not only the men that don't express their feelings, but also the women. And in Europe, therefore, you'll find the same difficulty. If you ask a woman to express her feelings in a certain way, she may or may not be able to do so.
So you think this is not just a difference between male and female, because a female seems to have more access to emotions than men do. You're saying in Europe, now is this in a repressive culture, or do you find this in every country?
Every country. Now, there are some differences. In Italy, as you know, as you may know, I mean, it's usually well known that people are actually rather expressive, right? Mm-hmm. They will speak with a lot of emphasis, emotional too, and sometimes they'll be expressive in a way that is emotional, but there is a certain set of emotionality that is acceptable to be displayed in public. And then there is another piece of emotionality that is not acceptable to share in public. What has to do, the kind of feeling, sharing feelings that you're describing, that the couple, the woman expects from the men, that kind of emotionality is not acceptable even for the women in Europe.
Now, is part of the reason for that because of a matter of, you know, the higher, it's considered to be low class to express your emotions?
Yes. One of the reasons for that is that the more, let's say, the higher up in the social strata you are, the more mysterious you're supposed to be. You see, no one is supposed to know about your emotional life because no one is supposed to know about your private life. So the higher up you are, the less you want people to know about you. So you don't really talk about yourself. So when someone spends a lot of time talking about their feelings, that's looked down on because it is seen as unevolved or almost like what a child would do, very self-centered.
Self-centered and egocentric. It's like it's about me, me, me.
Right, me, 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 poor me, this kind of thing, yeah.
It's an interesting thing because if you think about the animal kingdom, usually the higher strata have more colors and more brights and more attractive and more strength and bigger nests and all that stuff. But what you have among the humans is a need somewhat to become more invisible the more successful you are.
But see, it's tricky because it's not that you're becoming more invisible, it's that you have more control over what you show. You see? That you only show what you want to show, and you only show what is going to confirm your power. And anything that, if you express, let's say, sadness, you don't come across as powerful. Therefore, you don't want to show that.
So you contain these emotions. If you feel them, you even think to yourself, well, it's not right. You know, I'm a king. I should not be crying in front of my servants.
Because what is that going to do to them? It's really a matter of concern for the other person, too. You know? Like, it's not considered a kind thing to dump your negative emotions onto someone else.
Now, here in America, we kind of do it a little differently. Here, it's all about me-ism. I feel, you know, I feel I'm going to show my emotions. I'm going to be the one who's going to, you know, and we encourage people, and certainly this is my profession, we encourage people to locate and identify their emotions and feel their emotions and to talk about them.
Well, I think that there's something miraculous about that, because when I came over to the States and I started to do that, and I had never done it, I found it really liberating to have the freedom to talk about how I felt without the sense that I was being judged negatively because of it. So there is really a lot to be said for that kind of exercise. It's just that, I guess, indulging in it may be looked down on even here. And I think that in a couple situation that you were describing at the opening of the program, the men may in fact look down on or make fun of the kind of emotionality that, you know, gives a woman the freedom to talk about how she feels.
As Arnold said, you know, when a man shows his feelings, he's a girly man.
Is that what he said?
Yes, he said those are girly men.
A girly man.
Well, I think there's a lot to that, because let's talk about hormones for a moment.
Sure.
What we consider to be the macho man, the blind guy, the guy who is all testosterone and has no sensitive feelings. Let's talk about why that is, because I think it's true. I don't think it's just training.
No.
I think there are guys who are testosteronic.
Oh, absolutely.
I think there's no such word as testosteronic.
I think there is.
You know, because it sounds like moronic.
No, not quite.
But testosteronic is, you are a wild animal in the jungle. You are going to be the one who is raging. You are completely taking command at all points. You're the silverback. You have no.
There's a need for that. There's a need for individuals like that in a group, in an organism, in a social organism. There is a need for a leader, And that's the quality of the leader, to be someone who is almost invulnerable, like Achilles, you know. He only had a heel that was vulnerable. Imagine how much testosterone Achilles had. He was all testosterone. Anyway, so testosterone numbs the body, of course, because it developed over the millions of years. The brain of human males developed to withstand the danger and the violence of hunting. And hunting is very, requires the ability to separate almost from one's body in order not to feel fatigue, pain, injuries, anything that could make the hunt not succeed.
So to make that clear, an overdose of testosterone, not an overdose, but really flooding the system with testosterone, which happens during a battle, you actually, along with it, you feel no pain. You don't even recognize your wounds, or if you have a wound, you don't pay attention to it.
You can't feel it.
Well, but you have to be aware of it, because if you're going to be in battle, you don't try to hit somebody with a broken arm. So you're going to be aware of it, but you don't feel it.
Right.
So you're desensitized to your wounds, you're desensitized to your pain, and you're also desensitized to the emotions of the other person because you may be having to kill them.
Mm-hmm.
So there is this desensitization that happens to the male who is the testosteronic male, where he is not aware, and this is a better description of a psychopath than almost anybody I know, where they're not aware of the feelings of the other person.
And what you're describing is someone who is not in their body, who is not attached, connected to their physical self. I mean, they're just in their mind.
But they look like Rambo. I mean, they could easily be strong and powerful, and, you know, they'll be in their bodies, using their bodies as a machine. Mm-hmm. But that's the ultra testosterone. That's the ultra male.
That's the excessive.
Okay,
right.
Now the opposite of that, the very, very opposite of that in a woman would be what? The ultra...
Estrogenic.
Right?
Estrogenic. Estrogen is kind of like the opposite end of the hormonal spectrum. If testosterone is all male, estrogen is all female. Estrogen,
so what would an overdose of estrogen?
Estrogen is the hormone, for instance, that causes a body to put on fat tissue and hold on to it. It's what causes the body to become soft. It's what gives women the feminine look and the feminine.
So estrogenic
feel.
Is round curves.
Round curves. It's gentle expression, physical, facial, and
vulnerable.
Vulnerability.
Now, how does vulnerability work with estrogenic? Is it because of the absence of the testosterone?
Because of the absence of testosterone, but also because of the presence of estrogen, because estrogen favors neoteny. Neoteny is a word that means looking like a baby. And in our species, neoteny, looking like a baby, is favored by men in women.
Oh.
Men like women that look like babies. Now, I'm generalizing, of course, not everyone. But
so the idea of the Marilyn Monroe was she looked like a baby.
Right, that's why...
She was estrogenic?
Very estrogenic.
Marilyn Monroe,
if you have to picture an estrogenic woman, Marilyn Monroe is the perfect picture of that, yes. And Neoteny, yes, she looked... You know that vulnerable look that makes the eyes, large
yes,
eyes?
Yes, like Keane's, like the paintings by Keane, the big eyes.
And no hair, no facial hair, and a softness of feature where you don't have the sharp features of Rambo, where you don't have that square jaw kind of thing. And then the softness of the body, that's estrogenic. And that's what women are being selected for. The men tend to pick women that look like that.
Neoteny.
Neoteny, meaning they look like babes.
Isn't it interesting that many women have gone to get implants, right, on their lips, on their breasts? I saw somebody the other day with a breast implant and big lip implants. And it kind of all looked babyish.
That's the idea. That's what's attractive.
Plastic neoteny.
Plastic neoteny. It's very a nice name for a clinic.
Okay, so now we have the two extremes. We have the ultra testosteronic with the ultra
rainbow look.
Yeah, with the ultra estrogenic. These are the two extremes, and everybody, of course, falls somewhere in the middle. Now, why would a woman who is estrogenic at the extreme become less estrogenic? Because she has to defend her babies, right?
Mm-hmm.
So she's got to get a little testosterone in there. Is that true?
Less
estrogen? What do they do?
Generally, you know, I'm speaking from evolutionary perspective. The woman would protect the baby by holding the baby, but would let the male engage in a fight. Usually the woman doesn't engage in the fight. I mean, the female doesn't engage in the fight. But why would a woman want to diminish her estrogen? It may be, for instance, that a lot of estrogen would make her so attractive that she could find it difficult to get around. Women like Marilyn Monroe attract so much attention from the men that they can't go anywhere.
And the rest of the culture doesn't want anybody who is too estrogenic. We'll go for testosteronic, but we won't go for people who are too estrogenic because the women feel the competition is turning every man's head.
Right.
Your culture, your environment, you can't...
Marilyn Monroe didn't have an easy life precisely because all the women, she was very... she was the goddess. I mean, they all perceived her as too much. And the men all wanted to own her. You see, there's that... it's a strange thing that when it gets to that level, it becomes a hindrance, not a benefit.
You tend to be lassoed. You know, you tend to take the men who have these extra juices, you know, and they see somebody who is like a baby or who looks like that, and they're going to want to possess it.
And then she had that quality when she spoke whereby she was in constant surrender. Right? Do you ever remember Marilyn angry?
No.
Right? It doesn't exist. Right. So she had that quality of non-aggression.
You know the amazing thing when she sang at Jack Kennedy's birthday party? She sounded like a child. Every time I hear it, I hear a baby singing, you know?
Sure.
Like singing to her daddy.
And that's the whole idea.
You know, it didn't sound like a great female thing, a sexy thing. It sounded like a child thing.
Mm-hmm.
This is Armand Demoe, the Roberta Maria Atti. We're talking about maleness and femaleness, but we're talking about emotions. Now, if we would now say that the hunter, testosteronically endowed, is going to have fewer sensitive feelings, and the other side of it, the woman is going to have more, we could then say somewhere, if men get lucky, they are reducing this abundance of testosterone because they don't need it because they're not going to be hunting all the time. And it would be to their advantage to become more sensitive because they can feel more things because life doesn't just become about the hunt.
But it seems to me that when men try to do that, there's a part of them that resents it. When they try to comply with this express your feelings, they may comply with it and do the best they can, and then they feel diminished by it. Or I mean, not all men, but I've experienced a lot of men feeling diminished by having to express a part of themselves that normally their nature requires that they keep it hidden, that they don't share it. And by expressing it, as you were saying, Armand, Arnold said, those are the girly men?
Well, you see, what happens is sometimes when a man starts expressing his emotions, he's making it up.
Hmm.
He's kind of making it up to satisfy the urgings of somebody else. And his anger is not at the other person who's urging, because he could always say no, because a man would like to be more sensitive. I am sure it's to your great advantage to be able to see more flowers. You know what I mean?
But that doesn't have to do with emotions.
I think it does. I think you can have, you know, if you have more sensitivity, if you surrender more, which we're going to talk about, you get a greater perception of the things around you.
Really?
So I think what happens is men betray themselves because they start becoming something they're not.
Mm-hmm. Right.
That's, you know, and now comes this sensitivity. Now they are going to be very sensitive.
Now, I've read books like Sam Keen's books and, you know, those books of the new masculinity, the representatives of that wave. And I can't imagine these big fires, drumming sessions with men crying on each other's shoulders. Is that really what happens?
Yeah, you know, and it's kind of a beautiful thing to it, because when men, and this happens with women too, in, you know, in women in circles, in sweat lodges.
Uh-huh.
You know, something changes when you have the, when you could relax your guard. When a man is in a circle with other men, he can suddenly feel safe. Now remember, testosterone has a lot to do with danger. You've got to keep that up and you've got to keep your guard up because there's a danger somewhere. When you feel protected, when you feel somebody's got your back covered, you relax.
But then, Armand, I'm confused, because when men are together, don't they feel competitive?
No, it's kind of an idea that women have about men. There's a kind of a competition. That, you know, kind of a slapstick back and forth kind of competition. But mostly, from what I've seen, men who are close to men, especially I've seen this in men's groups, that men who are close to men, they're not competitive. They're looking for support. They're looking for brothers.
Mm.
I think women are far more competitive.
That's interesting.
Well, don't you?
Well, like when I go to my Women in the Woods yearly reunion, and there's, the, you know, maybe 100, 200 women in the woods together.
And no men.
There is absolutely no competition.
Well,
whatsoever.
Maybe the whole thing is, the competition is only when it's mixed.
Right.
You know, when there's men and women together. That's right. Why I think groups should always kind of be either all women's groups or all men's groups, because when they're mixed groups, you're dealing with this dynamic of the competition automatically.
Let's not mingle.
Well, yeah, no, the mingling doesn't work. But I wish you'd pronounce psychology right.
Psychology, of
yeah,
course.
Yeah, with your P, your silent P.
Psychology.
You know, in Italy.
Uh-huh. Well, in Italy, we say psicologia, of course, because that's how it's spelled. Yeah.
Well, you say, how do you say psoriasis?
Psoriasis.
You say P, with this P that you pronounced before.
It's called an explosive P.
Now, wait a minute. I've got to get this off my chest. This is going to be a segue. No, it's not going to be a segue. It's going to be a sidebar. I am sick and tired of silent P's being pronounced in Germany. When I go to Germany, they say, oh, you're a psychologist, you know. And I try to say it back, and I can't say it back, because the P is supposed to be silent.
Mm-hmm.
There's no P that you're supposed to...
It's as if you said, the purpose of this program is to...
The purpose of this program.
The purpose is to participate in a discussion.
Well, that's my idea. I think you're right, Roberta. I think we should take all the P's... And just as an exercise, we should try to eliminate all P's.
Initial P's.
Yeah, all P's that are at the beginning of a word.
Okay.
See, so now we could try to say, let's say we wanted to repose this Rogam. Rogram.
Repose this Rogram?
That means I'm going to propose this program.
Mm-hmm.
Right? And this involves everybody's participation. Right. And you can hone in on your... You can hone in by using the hone. You can hone in with your ideas, and then you could put you in and...
But if you are under 18, you have to ask your errands.
You got to ask your errands.
If you can hone in.
Yeah, at least call in, my friends, and ask your errands if you're a teenager, or if you're a reist.
Then you have to ray.
Then you have to ray. Because reists always have to ray. Say a rayer for us.
Uh-huh.
And okay. You might ask, what is the purpose of our program today or our exercise? Well, the idea, my friend, is that it is practically impossible to eliminate a letter.
Well, you just don't renounce it.
That's the idea. Take
you
a letter out.
You don't renounce it?
Well, I say don't renounce it.
It's a promise.
It's a promise. All we are saying is give East a chance.
That's it.
Okay, here, friends, don't listen to us because we're insane. But here's the idea. Give yourself an idea of once a day to eliminate the initial letter of P. Start with P.
P's a good one.
P's a good one because, you know.
Because of psychology.
Because of psychology, which now you're free. Mm-hmm. And then, you know, you could have E's and carrots. Right.
Or you could have potatoes.
Potatoes, right.
And arsnips.
And so if you do it for one day, it exercises your brain.
It's actually, yes, it's mental gymnastics.
And these mental gymnastics, you're going to find, you're going to think it's impossible to do. You're going to think that you can't possibly.
You can't possibly.
Possibly do this. And you'll find that you can.
It's a good exercise to focus the mind and to keep the mind focused while you're doing other things. You know, you're going about your day, but you're not renouncing your ease. And so that keeps your mind focused. And it's truly something that helps develop new pathways, neuronal, that is. It helps keep the mind on track. It's a new skill. I mean, it seems like a silly game, but it's actually a rather...
It's quite an interesting game, especially if you do it with a few people. You might do one letter at a time. We tried J, you know, and J was kind of fun.
Yeah, we tried a few. We tried C.
Yeah, and so...
But the most fun is the P.
So far, the most fun is... Hey, you said the P, finally.
Well...
So the most fun is to take the letter that follows. Oh? and to eliminate it from your vocabulary. This is Armand DeMille with Roberta Maria Atti. We are talking about...
The psychopath.
Oh, yes, the psychopath.
The psychopath, yeah.
Plain old psychopath.
No, lame old psychopath.
Lame old psychopath. Oh, God, we got to get off this F for now because...
Okay.
Right, we're going to have to go to our... Going back to what we're doing, and if you don't think we're having fun... There's something wrong with you because we're having fun. Not only are we having fun, tomorrow I have a guest on air, and we are going to be meeting with, boy, I wish you could be here, Roberta. You're going to be out of town, huh?
Yep.
We're going to be meeting with Dr., let's just get this, Mona Lisa Schultz, who's an MD, who's going to talk about the new feminine brain. And this is kind of fascinating stuff.
I'm going to tune in.
You're going to tune in because you can.
From wherever I am.
Yeah. This is Armand DeMille with you with Roberta Maria Atti. We are going to go back to talking about men's emotions and their sensitivities, how men can feel more and how what happens to them when they do. But we're going to bring you an example of this. We're going to take a short break, and we're going to play you a rather lengthy piece of music because Roberta wants you to hear this because she just loves this. But we're going to show you something that has male and female testosterone combined. Mm-hmm. So I want you to think about the testosterone that goes into this recording that will follow as soon as we take our station break with Michael. We'll be back with you in just a couple of minutes.
You're tuned to Hi-Fi, WBAI 99.5 on your FM dial, New York.
Tahrir, liberation. Marhaba, I'm Barbara Nimri Aziz. Tahrir is a long WBAI tradition and still strong in voices of the Arab Muslim community here and abroad. I invite you to tune in Tuesday evenings at 7 for discussions on Islam and society, justice and injustice, in-depth interviews with writers from across the world, and Fen Mashnoon, Crazy Arts, with Dean and Maysoon.
There's just one thing.
Job down in the city.
You see, we never, ever, do nothing.
Working for the man.
Nice.
Every night and
easy.
Day.
We always
but
do it.
I never lost.
Nice.
1 minute.
Rough.
And
we're going to take the beginning of this song and do it
then.
Easy.
Big wheel, keep
but then we're
going to
do the finish.
Hurling.
Rough.
Proud Mary.
The way we
keep
do.
On burning.
Proud Mary.
And we're rolling.
I was worried about the way that things might have been.
The Umbra Shake. What about that?
Oh, wow.
Now, you talk about testosterone.
Mm.
Right now, Tina Turner seems to...
There's a lot of estrogen there, too.
There's both.
Yes, she's got it. She's got both, and she knows how to use them.
I didn't know we were going to go to that level. Yeah, he's got it, and he knows how to use it, too.
Oh, I love Tina Turner.
Okay, so there is this ability. I want to go back to this Arnold's concept of girly men, because I'm a girly man. I have feelings. I have sensitivities. I know I have sensitivities. I could connect with them. I could feel sadness. I could feel stuff. I don't talk about it too much, but I am aware of it.
You can talk about it if you want to.
If I needed to, I would talk about it. If it would get me some mileage, I would talk about it.
There we go.
There we go. But
so there has to be a purpose for it.
But, you know, I am so also in tune with these emotions on every level in another human. You know, in every level, if I could see, there's not an emotion I don't perceive as well. I may not be as sensitive to my own, because I think I have this basic intrinsic maleness that kind of sticks around from my generations, but I could certainly see it in other people, and I could certainly identify with and feel what a person's feeling, which is kind of unusual. You know, I know it's an unusual quality to have, but if we think about that, Roberta, and we think about sensitive men, and we think about men who have both the sensitivities and the masculinity together.
Right.
You know, we begin seeing what looks like what I think metrosexual is about, or people who are not as defined in their sexuality. Because many men feel like they're women born in a man's body.
Mm-hmm.
You know, many women feel like they're men born in a woman's body.
You know, it has been said, and it seems not that far-fetched, that the urban environment and the technological era is leading humanity towards that bisexual look, towards that look that could be just as attractive as a male as it would be as a female. You know what I'm saying? And so I think that there is a change going on in the hormonal configuration as well as in the brains and in the hearts of people. But if we look at evolution, then we look at why things have evolved a certain way. And, you know, for instance, surrender is one of the behaviors that increases the odds for survival, the capacity to surrender.
Well, surrender now, let's take that as a form of vulnerability. There's a good phrase. What does it mean to surrender? It means to give up your will to the will of another person, or the will of another person or another force.
Right. Surrender control, right?
It's give up control, give up your will.
Control. And
which is about will.
Right.
It's about exercising your will over something.
Or not.
Or not. So when you give it up, you say, this is surrender.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, I surrender, I give up the battle. I turn over. In wolves, every now and then, if a wolf is fighting another wolf and the wolf says, you're bigger than me and you got sharper teeth than me, the lesser male will surrender. And how does he surrender?
Turns belly up.
He turns his belly up to his opponent so that if his opponent now has a choice, he says, you win.
Mm-hmm.
Go ahead, rip my gut out if you want. But he is confident that if he turns belly up, his opponent will stop.
Because the animals do stop. Animals are different from people when they have an enemy and the enemy shows surrender. Most animals will stop and walk away because they already won the battle. They don't need to kill. In fact, a good idea, this is just a piece of useful advice, if you're ever being threatened with a dog who's about to attack you, running away is the worst thing you could do. Lying down and showing your belly, that the dog will understand and most likely will leave you alone. Did you know that, Armand? Even with wolves, if you're somewhere where there's a pack of wolves or bears, running away is the worst thing a person can do. Sometimes showing your belly works, and the bear or the wolf will just walk away and leave you alone.
You think that's why bikinis were invented?
I certainly do.
You
I
know,
think that's
to keep the wolves, away. No, it doesn't. It doesn't keep the wolves away.
But let's go back to surrender. I think it's an interesting
concept. It is an interesting
concept because it's...
Evolutionarily.
It's misunderstood. And it's thought that the person who surrenders, who is willing to surrender, shows weakness, shows submission, shows loss of confidence, you know. And it could be just the opposite. It could be that the surrender behavior is actually an act of cooperation, for instance. And, for instance, let's take an group of cells like the cells of the immune system. In the immune system, Armand, when cells cooperate with one another, those cells that cooperate and surrender to the greater will replicate and produce more of themselves and thrive and do really well. Those cells that don't cooperate and act like they are on their own are eliminated early on in the game. And that applies to all societies, all communities of individuals or organisms. So the act of surrender, the capacity to surrender, is an advantage.
So there must be, in every culture, there has to be, first of all, I want to say this about surrender. Surrender is sometimes an act of dominance.
Right.
Do you know what I mean? If somebody foolish wants to battle you, if somebody's yelling at you,
yes,
give up.
Right.
I lose the battle. Okay, you win. Right? What is this about? Yep, you win. Sure, whatever it is, I give up the battle. That could be an act of dominance.
That's very important to say that, yes.
But then, there is in every culture, there's going to be a dominant who is going to be like the fighter ants, you know, that protect the nest of ants.
Mm-hmm.
You know, there's going to be the, what do they call them, the soldier ants?
Soldier ants.
The soldier ants, they're going to be dominant. They're going to be out there fighting everything that
like
comes
Rambos.
In.
Like Rambos. Those are the Rambos of the
Rambo
of the
ants.
Ants. Right.
And they'll be out there, and you need those to protect your nest. And then before those, you get these others that are willing to surrender at any cost. They just say, I turn over because I don't need to be aggressive.
And you see, the Rambo ants are not necessarily the ones whose genes are going to make it into the future because they're the first ones who are going to get killed.
Oh, very interesting.
The ones
sure.
that surrender, that stay within the, you know, confinement, I mean, within the perimeter of the territory, and are more willing to cooperate and to surrender, those are going to make it into the future because they're going to live longer.
That's why we should cooperate with President Bush.
President Bush?
Sure. We should just surrender and give up, and this way we'll survive and we'll have more babies, and the rest of us who are going to be on the lines marching, you know, if you're marching, you don't have as much time to have babies. So eventually you get kind of burned out, like the Democratic Party got completely burned out.
Mm. Let's go back to the silent peas.
As in elitical.
Yes.
The elitical party.
The resident.
So surrender is kind of an interesting concept, my friends, because every one of us want to be able to have the power to surrender your will. It is an amazing ability. If you're a man and you're afraid of crying, you know, and you go through grief and you feel the grief coming up, you'd love to weep. The weep would be such a great release.
Mm-hmm.
Tears are the sweat of the heart, you know, and you want to let that kind of out, but you can't because all of your programming says I can't. And what it would take would be a surrender. You just got to surrender your will. You have to say, okay, just let it take over me.
Right.
And so this capacity is so ideal as a survival tool because it makes you have choices as opposed to being the oak. You know, you can become the bamboo. Is that a good metaphor?
Yeah, the bamboo is the one that bends and doesn't break. Also, Armand, they did some studies on the behavior of extroverts, aggressive people, and introverts, more mellow people. It turns out that the introverts have a brain that is much wealthier in neurotransmitters than the extroverts. And that's why an introverted individual, someone who doesn't display a lot of aggression, a lot of dominance, a lot of, you know, that Rambo behavior, that is a person who has enough neurotransmitters that they don't need to have all that external activity. Whereas the extroverts, often, if you take an MRI, you'll find that they're lacking enough neurotransmitters in certain areas of the brain, and so they need that external behavior and activity and stimulus in order to compensate for that lack.
Well, it kind of makes sense. There are the cave dwellers, mm-hmm. and there are the non-cave dwellers. The cave dwellers are going to become more autistic. They're going to be using their brain inside the cave, the ones who stay inside instead of going out in the jungle and fighting in the jungle.
Right.
Will develop more of their brain power because they'll figure out how to store food, how to make things work, because they're going to be in the caves. They're not going to be venturing out as much.
And also what I'm saying is that behavior is not always, you know, it's not always the way to determine if someone is really a powerful person or not, because sometimes people who act very, you know, like they're in control, it may very well be that it's the opposite, that they feel so insecure inside that they need to act a certain way to compensate for a certain inner sense of vulnerability.
It's almost, it's very confusing to me to imagine. Anytime I see somebody who is showing a kind of compensatory power, strength, they never look strong to me. Do they look strong to
me? Maybe not to you, Armand, but to
me. Oh, do they to you?
No, they don't look that way to me.
So
I mean,
a guy's out there in the
streets. That's a typical bully, right?
He's a bully, so he's pushing kids around. Does anybody believe he feels strong?
Some people do. Believe me, I mean, it's, yeah, and I mean, you know this, that it, for, unfortunately, that kind of behavior is coercive. But it's so clearly a sign of insecurity and
vulnerability.
And, you know, if you're vulnerable, it reminds me of the hermit crabs that I used to have that have a soft belly and they, you know, put their bellies in a shell so that they don't get eaten. And it's so cute. Did you ever see, Armand, the hermit
crabs? Yes, sure. It picks up the shell of anything.
Oh, yeah, so that's what...
They see them on the beach. They'll pick up another shell and they'll kind of walk along in somebody else's house.
And that's kind of like what the bullies remind me of, like a hermit crab that has a soft belly and is so scared that someone is going to come by and eat them that they put on this armor.
Well, a lot of men are like that, but, you know, on one level. But then again, as we said at the beginning of the program, one of the armors that people who are vulnerable, what they put on is this illusion of vulnerability. Now, in nature, we know about that in the insect life. We know about one of the ways of getting food is to make believe you're hurt. Right? What was it about the fickle fish? Is it the fickle fish?
The stickleback fish.
What about the stickleback fish? What makes him so important?
The stickleback fish has a very interesting mating behavior. The stickleback fish male will go around and look for seaweed and things, and he will make a nest. And the nest will be like a tunnel, kind of, but it has one entrance and one exit, and they're open. And then he goes around, and when the time is right, the male will turn red, a color that the female can see. And so she sees him, and she swims over, and he shows her the nest by going through the nest, and so she sees, oh, there's a nest there. So she goes in the nest, unloads the eggs, and then he chases her away, and he goes into the nest and fertilizes those eggs, but then he sends her away because he wants a new partner. He wants a new female to come in and lay more eggs. So the stickleback fish's behavior has been compared to behavior of some guys who, you know, every night have a different girl like that. They make a nest and attract the female, and then once they're done with her, oh, next.
Drop your eggs.
Go.
Get out of here, you know, let's see the next eggs. I mean, that's why you should always watch out for a guy who's got a seaweed house.
Yes, you know, if you or a stickleback.
Or a stickleback.
What's a stickleback?
I don't know. But, I like calling it a fickleback fish.
Okay.
Because it is a fickle fish.
It definitely.
You know, I mean, if it's.
There's no bonding there. He wants her in there, lay those eggs, and go.
He doesn't have sex with them?
The way he has sex with her is he fertilizes those eggs, but that's it. Well, no, actually, I'm wrong. He does, when she's in the nest, he does move her, the back of her body so that the tail is moved around in such a way that the eggs come out more easily. So he, in a way, he does something to her.
He must be having some kind of fun because, you know, I mean, nature builds it so that everybody enjoys what they do for a little period of time.
Yes, I'm sure he enjoys thoroughly.
Except for the praying mantis. But I guess they enjoy that thoroughly,
too. I think, in doing the research for this show, Armand, I actually read some articles about the term is masochism, but it's not the pathological, not seen in a pathological way, just the need to surrender to another human being, the need to feel contained by another human being, the need to feel one's emotions safely contained within the limits of another. That's actually a fascinating aspect of surrendering. And it doesn't mean being weak. In fact, people who enjoy that kind of sexuality are often the leaders in the community, in society, are people who are capable of asserting themselves and have a lot of self-confidence. So the two don't, you know, we have this image of the masochist as someone who is a weakling.
A victim in many ways.
And it seems to be the opposite, actually. It seems that the people that enjoy that kind of sexuality are the most assertive in social life.
It's called topping from below.
Is that what it's
called? You know
what
I mean? What they call in the S&M world is the one who is on top is the dominant.
Mm-hmm.
Topping from below is being a submissive, but gaining the upper hand.
Mm-hmm.
And you could do that, but you could do that by a kind of strategic surrender.
Strategic surrender. I like that. Strategic surrender. I think that says it exactly.
And if we eliminated the S's, it would be a strategic surrender.
A strategic surrender. I like that.
Hey, this is Armand DeMille with Roberta Maria Atti. Even though it sounds like it's casual conversation, my friends, I strongly recommend you take a little more, you do a little more research on it, because it is a very important concept here. What are we asking people to do? We're asking many women to get stronger, many men to get softer, and sure, it's happening naturally. You know, everybody is kind of coming out of those stereotypic roles and they're getting a little stronger and a little softer accordingly. But the demand isn't working. To demand of someone that they feel what they don't feel and to imagine that the only way to get through to them is to unblock them.
Mm.
You know?
Yeah.
It's like taking laxatives. You know, it does not regulate you.
Or diuretics, right?
So anyway, we'll be back with you in, let me see, Roberta, how do they reach your website? You're going to be away for, you're not going to be here next week either,
are
you?
I'm not going to be here. I am going to be in a light seminar, learning about light. I'm doing some research on the uses of light. Isn't that fascinating?
It is fascinating.
www.creativehealthsolutions.org. That's
creativehealthsolutions.org. And, of course, if you want to go to our website, it's www.thepositivemind.com. And listen, friends, this program is available to you by calling our office 212-757-4100. 212-757-4488. That's 212-757-4488. I'll be back with you on Tuesday at 1 p.m.
Quite beautiful indeed. Women of Ireland by Sean Riada, R-I-A-D-A. Women of Ireland here on WBAI. Thank you very much, Armand DeMille and Roberta Maria Atti. Coming up next, yours truly, Michael G. Haskins, with Light Show. But first, an announcement or two.